Welcome to Next Us 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African-American community. I'm your host, Dr. JC. The inaugural season of Next Us 818 Podcast focuses on the 6888 Central Postal Directorate Battalion, the only all-African-American, all-female battalion to serve in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. If you're tuning into the podcast for the very first time, I encourage you to check out the inaugural episode from September the 7th of 2022 to learn about the background of the 6888 Battalion. I'm pleased to welcome to episode 13, three descendants of Private First Class Margaret Glenn Sales Sims, who served in the 6888. My guests tonight are Carol, Emmanuel, and Clovis Sims, daughter and sons of Margaret Glenn Sales Sims. Welcome, Carol, Manny, and Clovis.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
Thanks for having us. Thank you for having us.
I'd like to start with a few interesting facts. First, your mom, Margaret, if I may call her Margaret, was underage when she enlisted. And second, her military background was an integral part of your childhood, from the toys you had to learning the Army way of making beds and ironing clothes. So those are some facts we're going to explore in a bit. But first, let's talk about Margaret Lynn Sales Sims. She was born in Evanston, Illinois, and was adopted at an older age.
Let me just correct that. Found out she was in foster care with our grandmother, and then she was adopted at 12 and a half. So she was with her as a baby.
Okay, thank you. So I understand she was underage when she enlisted. She was a student at Fisk before enlisting. So tell me about how she enlisted and what age she was.
When she came out of DuSable High School in Chicago and went on to Fisk for a year, after that, going to Northwestern for about a year. And then from there, she went into the military.
But she was still underage when she enlisted?
She turned 20 the day she enlisted.
Okay. All right. So what did she tell you about why she decided to enlist?
I believe that she wanted to explore, experience, and serve her country. I found in one of her letters that she was responding to one of the church, corresponding with one of the church members, Georgia Williams. She wrote, "I am grateful for all my experiences. It made me appreciate everything, especially school. I know now what I want to do. I owe it all to my mother and aunt who has taught me how to live." So from that, I'm just thinking she just wanted to experience what her mom and aunt taught her.
Okay.
And pushed her to do.
How did her mom and her aunt react to the decision to enlist? She ever talk about that?
I'm not sure. I can't. Can you all remember?
Granny did sign for her, right?
Yeah.
I think my mother was pretty much like my grandmother, in that she was always supportive. They were supportive. And from what I could gather from listening to my mother and just knowing my grandmother and aunt, they were just there for you. You know, mm-hmm. they were not the kind of people that discouraged you. They were the kind of people that helped you to explore.
Okay. But it was still pretty courageous for a young Black woman to enlist in the Army in the 40s. What do you think made her so special?
That's a good question. That's one of the things I recognize about my mother now. I mean, her courage and things that she did that were sort of, you might take for granted. I mean, even the way she would travel, she never drove. But she traveled everywhere. And some of those places she traveled, people might think that they were kind of dangerous, but she never showed fear or concern about that. She did what she thought she needed to do. I was always, in awe of the fact that here's a war and she decided to run toward it. So
right. That's pretty incredible about all of these women. It's something to... It's really something what they did. So I'm interested in any stories that she shared with you about her time in the service, any adventures, whether painful or funny or scary memories. Now you mentioned a couple of things I want you to make sure you cover. You told me that she studied at Trinity College while she was in 6888, and she had an excursion to Switzerland. And then I want you to tell us about the story of from, I guess from England, where they believe that black folks had to have tails. So I'm gonna now open it up, and you all can just kind of tell me any interesting stories that she shared.
First, I'll say what her duties were. She was a postal clerk. She was distributing incoming mail and preparing outgoing mail for shipment. She maintained the locator file system on all troops in ETO. Now, I'm not sure what ETO is.
European Theater of Operations.
Thank you. And redirected unclaimed mail, sold stamps, money orders, and handled insured and registered mail. So she did all of that. Then our mom was, music was part of her life also. So while overseas, she joined and directed the Overseas University Club Choir, and she also assisted the chaplain there. And she was able to use the Hammond organ and the pipe organ, practiced and also played for the services.
So when you mentioned the college, she was that Trinity?
Yes,
Okay.
Trinity. So, but this was a di this was something different,
Okay.
I think I'm not sure what the
So
Overseas University Club Choir was.
okay.
I don't know if it pertained to Trinity. I'm not sure. I saw it in a newspaper article that was written about her for, the hometown girl,
Okay.
Chicago. So she became good friends with another 6888 soldier. Her name was Lucy Pollitt, and she was from Maryland. They were always together, and she would always refer to her as her sister. So they took a 7-day furlough to Switzerland, and they had made, quite a few friends there and were invited into the homes for dinner. When she and Lucy went to Switzerland, they had gotten their picture on the cover of a Switzerland paper or magazine. And then she wrote, I found this in her letter, "Everybody is so proud of us and think we were a good representation to go to Switzerland first." So I'm thinking they were the only two that did an
Okay.
excursion there. Mom would always tell us about her trip, her visit, her friends actually in Switzerland, people she met. They had this idea that black people had tails hidden inside of their clothes. And mom would always say, they were trying to get her and Lucy to stay later, to stay over, so that they could see the tail come out. I said, I was like, "Mom, are you serious?" And she said, "Yes." So I don't know what happened or how they got out of that.
Well, this is not the first time that I've heard this.
Yes.
This belief that black. And what I always tell people is when I went to college in the late 60s in Indiana, they still thought the same thing.
Really?
Wow.
I didn't need I
I know it's hard to believe. It's supposed to the tails would come out after midnight, so people want you to stay late until midnight came. Yep, same story. Yep, it's amazing how something that someone picked up in that part of Europe also a generation later people
Yes.
know in Indiana.
Oh
So
yeah. Well, she loved Switzerland. I mean, she and the people she met there. She also, let's see, what did she say? She also wrote, I think, because being out there in Europe and Switzerland, she also wrote in one of her letters that she wanted to own a farm, which was like, "Oh my goodness, Mom, I never would have thought you wanted to own a farm." So that
So,
surprised me.
when you make reference to her letters, is it more like a memoir or a letter she actually sent home?
You know, The letters that I found were mainly from her, the superintendent of Sunday schools at our church. So they were corresponding a lot. I never could find any letters to our that she would write to her grandma, to her mother and aunt. But I mean, she would always make reference into the letters that she wrote, tell mother and aunt hello and watch, keep watch over them, take care of them. So I'm not sure what happened to any corresponding letters there.
So Manny, Clovis, did she share any interesting stories from her time do you with you as you recall?
Just the well the tail story is always interesting, but I just remember comments my mother making about doing certain things. I mean that we would do on a daily basis in terms of making the bed and shining our shoes and ironing. I mean, all of that was, all of it was military shaped.
So did you have you kept up those practices?
Yes, I'm the guy who does who makes the bed every morning because no one else can do it correctly in this house. You can't do it the military way.
We missed that in our house. Mom did it because she wrote about it in her memoirs, but somehow it didn't pass down to us. So we don't make our beds the military way, but. Manny?
Well, I know that she influenced me, at least I know in high school. In high school, I had the option of either taking gym or going into the ROTC. And I kind of think that military, seeing the uniform, seeing she would have her ribbons, placed on the top of the dresser. I'd see it as a child, and I maybe that had some kind of influence in terms of what direction I went. So I became an officer, not an officer, but I joined the ROTC, became a, member of that in school, in high school.
Okay. And we're going to talk some more about influence in a minute, the influence on your life and your career. First, I want to hear more about what she did when she completed her military service, her education and her career. So what did she do when she came back?
Of course, she wanted to be a concert pianist, and that's why she went to Trinity College. Let me just hop back to that to study more. But then when she came after she completed her service, she was discharged from the Army at Fort Sheridan, Illinois, in April 26, 1946. So she in 1947, she ended up marrying our father, Clovis Sims, and he was in the army also, and also he was a member of her church, Cosmopolitan Community Church. They married, and her friend from the army, Lucy Pollitt, was her maid of honor, their wedding. And then after they were married, they moved to Lafayette, Indiana, and was living there with our father's parents. So, Emmanuel, you want to take that over? Because you were
From what
Born.
what I remember,
Where
where I was
y'all
born,
lived.
yes. Shortly after they moved there, I was born, and they put together a little house in the back of my grandfather's house. In fact, they converted an old chicken coop that was back there, and they—that's where they lived for a while. So I lived in a chicken coop for maybe a year or two before I finally went, until they finally moved to Chicago. He had graduated from college, and they were able to then move to Chicago.
Yeah, Dad had graduated.
Right.
Yeah. And then once we moved back to Chicago, then Clovis came, Clovis Jr., and then later on I came.
Yes, I think mom didn't work until she didn't finish school until later. That was in what, 64?
Yeah, because they were getting a divorce.
Yeah.
So
she went back to Northwestern to finish?
No. She decided to go into education, and because she had to, she was the breadwinner now. So she went to a Chicago Teachers College, which is now called Chicago State University.
Okay.
So she received her Bachelor's of Education in 1964, and then her Master's of Arts in Elementary Education, September 1975 at Roosevelt University. And then, guys, anything?
Yeah. I think before that time, before she finished school or went back to school, I think she worked at the post office for a while.
Yeah.
She may have had some other jobs, but I'm not sure what, you know, I just know she went to work and she came back. But I do remember, I think she worked at the post office for a while before she went back to school and got her teaching credentials. In the meantime, she was always playing, you know, she was always involved with music.
Okay, so she was teaching after she got her degree, she was a music teacher?
No, she was an elementary school teacher.
Okay.
And then she was
she had many private students that would come by the house all the time. She was teaching music. She did teach some music in the context of elementary education. She played and she also taught music. But ultimately, in terms of her profession, reading as a reading specialist became her main focus.
Okay. Was she able to take advantage of the GI Bill?
Yes.
How did she use that?
Must have been for her education at Chicago State, when Chicago Teachers College, I believe. She would talk about that, but I assume that she used it.
Okay. Yeah, not all veterans were able to take advantage of the GI Bill. That's the reason I asked the question. So do you recall any lessons that she learned through her time in the service that she passed on to the family? Are there any values or traditions that she passed on as a consequence of her service? I know one of them was how to make the beds. You know, we do know that. But are there things that you felt are specific to?
And shine shoes.
Okay.
And iron your clothes appropriately.
Well, in general, she told me, taught me not to be afraid to explore things, places, and even ideas, things that would normally take me out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
So I think she taught all of us that, to kind of don't be afraid to, you know, to look at other things from a different perspective, or just, you know, see how you could, you know, how you would interact with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Coach, you have anything you want to add to that?
Well, I think they were all the things that my mother, and I'm not always sure whether she brought this to the military or she brought it from the military. I think it's a little bit of both. But she was always a person, I mean, and she applied it to her teaching. She knew how to lift people up, you know, how to give them confidence. And inspire people. And when people were down, students were down, friends were down, children were down, she knew how to lift them up. And it wasn't that she gave people materially. She didn't give you everything you wanted, because she didn't have everything you wanted. But she would always give you enough where you could get over the hump and do something for yourself. And so she would always, That was one of her, I think, strengths, that she could get you past that really bad place.
That's such a gift.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really is.
I think another thing she might have gotten from the Army, or maybe not, was parenting. You know, she didn't use like a general template to manage the three of us. She took each one of us as we came and adapted her parenting style to fit us. So, you know, as we each have our own personalities, and I think she adapted her parenting style to maximize it. So if some one of us needed help, she would change her parenting skills to match, to help us, or to match us and to maximize, to be more effective in that parenting. So I think that
definitely wasn't one size fits all. It was, she would deal with you, your individual need. She would adapt, as my brother said, she would adapt to whatever your needs were.
Okay, thanks. So now let's segue and talk about each of you and your respective careers and backgrounds. So Carolyn, we'll start with you. You are a professional cellist and string teacher, and you taught at the Michelle Obama School of Technology and the Arts. So tell us about your educational background and your career.
I started at the age of 10 at the American Conservatory of Music, which is where my mom started her music education there. I just loved it. Loved the cello. Just wanted to follow in my mom's footsteps. So I decided to continue. I went to Roosevelt University, School of Music there, and received my Bachelor's of Music in Performance. Later, I went to DePaul University School of Music and received my Master's in Performance. From there, I just have been freelancing and teaching. First, I didn't want to teach. It was like, oh, no, I don't want to teach. I wanted to perform. And then a friend of mine, actually my partner, got me a job at Emerson School of the Visual and Performing Arts, Gary, Indiana. They needed a cello teacher. So I ended up there. I ended up there right after I received my master's and just fell in love with teaching. It's like it just came natural to me. And I've been with it ever since. I've gone to a couple of schools and taught string orchestra. And I was an adjunct university professor at Olivet Nazarene University for several years as their cello teacher. Also, I play in a couple of orchestras, a few orchestras. Now I'm sort of retired. Thought I was going to be retired, but I guess I'm not, because I'm still doing a whole lot of stuff. So I'm still teaching. I teach online also, and also I'm starting to have some students come back to the home. I'm helping out a friend with starting a string program at one of the school districts out here, Crete Mooney School District. I think that's it. All I can think of.
There's no such thing as retirement for busy people.
No, might as well forget it.
Clovis, I'm going to go with you next. You are a professor emeritus of African American Studies at Eastern Michigan University and the recipient of a National Endowment of Humanities Fellowship and a few other awards. Want to talk about your educational background and career?
I think it's another area that my mother had a lot of influence. Some of it, I'm not really sure what her influence was in a direct way. I know that I ended up in college some kind of way, and I know she had something to do with it. I can't figure out exactly how I got to where I got to. But nonetheless, I ended up going to Northwestern University as an undergraduate, a master's at U of I Chicago, and then later on returned to Northwestern for the PhD. Taught at University of Illinois Chicago for 10 years, went back into administration for a couple of years at Northwestern, then returned to teaching. Went to Eastern Michigan for about 20 years, and then University of Missouri, Kansas City for about another 10 years. So basically just spent most of my career in academia, you know, did some writing, did some publishing, did a little bit of administration. That was it. Now I'm trying to just recover from all the 40 years or so. But my mother loved books. And I think that helped us all to love books. You know, I think we all spent a lot of time in the library. You know, Black folks would buy those Encyclopedia Britannicas.
And we
read them all the time. And that stimulated our brains a bit. So that was a good thing.
So I understand she had books with her everywhere she went?
Yes.
She couldn't go anywhere. She would go to these conferences. She would buy books. She just wouldn't buy a book for herself. She would buy the book. She liked the book. She'd buy the book. Then she'd buy one for you and for for everybody that she thought would like that book. So she just loved books.
And you all spend a lot of time in the library as kids, I gather?
That and bookstores.
Okay.
That and bookstores. Yeah.
Yeah, find a little corner in a bookstore and she go off somewhere looking at fur books and sitting in a corner looking at my books.
I assume that's why becoming a reading specialist was the right thing for her, because it was the road to those books.
Yeah. All right. So Manny, you are a pharmacist and served as the head of the Department of Pharmacy Investigational Drug Services at the University of Chicago Hospitals and Clinics. So tell me about your background.
First off, I always have to say, Mom, she really influenced or got me reading. She got me interested in science when I was very young. I think we all went through the science phase, my brother and I, at least. We loved astronomy. Of course, we loved dinosaurs. But I kind of stick with nonfiction. So with that direction, I went into science. I loved science. So when I came out of school, high school, I said, let's try chemistry. So I went through University of Illinois, Chicago campus, came out with a degree in chemistry and BS in chemistry. This was during the Vietnam War. And at that time, there was not too many companies, chemical companies out there that were not involved in making napalm and various chemicals for war. So I said, I don't want to do this. I don't like this. I said, what's similar to chemistry? I said, pharmacy. So I went in pharmacy school, went because of my background, my degree, I came out in 3 years. And after that, I became a pharmacist. I started working in drugstores, little small community hospitals. And in 1980, I said, I saw this opening in the University of Chicago. Started University of Chicago as a staff pharmacist. In about a couple of years, a year later, they asked me to become the supervisor. And then maybe a year after that, there was an opening for an investigational drug service coordinator. And so no one wanted to take that because they didn't know what investigational drugs were at that time, you know. So I basically carved out my position when I took it, and I was able to be the coordinator for maybe 30 years.
Okay. All right. Thanks for sharing, all three of you, for sharing your background. Let me ask you this. Did anybody in the family go into the military? Yeah, I know you both, your parents were in the military.
I wanted to. Anything military my mom had, I was always looking at her pictures. I played Army. And played by myself. So and she was fine with it. You know, she would let me, I'd say, Mom, can I go to the Army and Navy surplus store? I want to look at, see what they got. Can I get some medals or something? And she took me there. And I was able to get a fatigue uniform. And oh, I was in heaven with that when I got that. And then the G.I. Joe doll came out, and oh, that even made it extra special. So I don't know. I wanted to, but I just went into a different direction.
Okay.
You know, so, but I was just so, so proud of the fact she was in the Army.
Well, for me, this was during the Vietnam War. It wasn't a popular war.
No. No, it was not. No one was really going over there voluntarily. Very few people going voluntarily.
Yeah, in fact, I was 1A when I was in college, and I took my physical, and I guess I was ready to be, you know, enlist, you know, get drafted. But then they went to a lottery system, and I guess it wasn't in the cards. So I got a pretty high number, and they I got out of going. Because of my number.
Okay.
But I know a lot of friends that weren't as fortunate. A few guys went to Canada. Some of them, you know, did other things to try to get out. So but a few of my friends went.
And none of your, and no one's kids have gone in the military?
No.
Okay. So you described your mom as a techie who's kind of ahead of her time. And we know she was a lifelong learner. So you want to talk about that? Share some fun stories.
Oh, every time I would see mom, she had some kind of new technology she was learning. You know, when she was a teacher, she had moved to the most highest tech type of mimeographing. She had there was a new type out there, and then later on, when computers came out, she had to get it. She was out there learning it, and it kind of rubbed off on me because I did the same thing pretty much. But she loved high tech. She loved technology, and she wanted to learn as much as she could. And kind of, again, it rubbed off on me.
Yeah, she had, her last computer was the Mac. It was the big.
Yeah.
The big Mac. Yeah. And she was just getting her phone. That's when the phones started coming out, cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
So she had her little phone. Well, not little phone, I should say.
They were pretty big back then, yeah. The size of a billy club, actually.
I think
it was the first GE phone, yep.
Yes. I know she was a Mac person. She was loving the Mac. I tell my brothers, I said, if she was here today, she would have every Apple contraption possible.
They have all the toys.
All the toys. Yes, she would.
In what ways do you think her service in the 6AAA influenced your career drive and focus?
That's a difficult question, because I think the influences is more indirect than direct. A lot of things, of course, she had before she went in, but I think she was able to mature and to explore, and the maturation and exploration is what she got to us in terms of shaping our careers and our direction. As I said, you know, even going to how I got into college, or how we all got into college, somehow she was in the background pulling those strings and directing us. And we didn't know it. We didn't understand it. But she had it figured out what we needed, you know, our various strengths and weaknesses. And she was moving us and directing us in ways that we have probably yet to truly understand.
Sounds like you were like her troops.
Yeah.
I think so.
you have to know the strengths and weaknesses of members of your personnel. You know?
Yes. Learn leadership, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
She was guiding.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Amen.
No, I was just thinking her service abroad taught us I think she brought back that, taught us how to search to a balance between quality and quantity. You know, there's, one is, I guess, is subjective, one is objective, but she taught us to always look for the difference between and trying to figure out which is best. That kind of taught us to be patient before we did something, because maybe you know, you could probably get something cheap, or you should, you know, and just get them over, keep getting them over time as when they wear out. Just get something that's quality. Save your money, be patient, do your research, and get that. Look for the difference, look for the advantages of getting that quality thing versus just buying multiple versions of it. And that kind of philosophy has helped me, you know, over the years. And, you know, before you can do that, you also have to be able to have a good financial base. So you can't just buy quality stuff or be able to search for which is best until you have like income coming in. So,
mm-hmm.
So that kind of, I think that philosophy has kind of guided me into a lot of things, whether it's, you know, higher education. I mean, it's just working in the background, you know,
okay.
That search. It's a lot of things involved, but I think that was one of them.
Any other insights you all would like to share about your mother's influence on your lives? Overall? Yeah.
Well, I know if I come up with some crazy idea I wanted to do, I would come excited and she would stop me in my tracks and say, you know, well, let's think about this throughout. Think about those pros and cons, you know. And she would always do that. And I would now, I would, before I do anything, I really stop and think about, okay, now if I did this, I don't know how this would work out for me. So, you know, let me think twice about it, where before I was just kind of just jumping into stuff.
I have to jump in here. I have to jump in here. My sister is so modest. She forgot to tell you about, was it 5 years? No, 7 years? Who was it?
Eight
years.
Yeah, yeah.
That you were in business. She started a business. I think mom influenced her a lot, you know, in starting that business. So you want to take it?
Well, that business, I don't know. It was just eating at me to do. And it's one of those moments I didn't think about it. I just did it.
And what kind of business was that?
It was I had a music shop where I had, I sold string. It was a string shop. I sold accessories for strings. And then I had lessons for students. I had several teachers that were, I had hired, would get left lessons to. So I had a partner did the band instruments. I had about 3 violin teachers, 2 cello teachers, maybe 3 piano teachers there. Just geared towards mainly the string instruments. I did have the band instruments there in case people would come in and be interested. So that happened for 8 years, and I had to let go. One thing at that time, the economy was getting kind of shaky, and then our father was getting was up in age, and he needed assistance. Yeah, I did the business thing. It was
And you think about it, mom had a business. I mean, she was teaching students.
Yes, she was.
In fact, I was a student for a little bit.
Yeah.
Until I heard the call of the wild, I responded to the call of the wild. Just.
Yeah, she tried with me, and we'd always bump heads. So, I go back and think, I wish I.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
How old was your mom when she passed?
74 or 73.
And she was a young person.
Yeah.
She hadn't been ill at all. I mean, until she got pancreatic cancer, and it just hit so quick. Yeah, just hit so quickly. We were all in shock. But she was a trooper with it. She stayed strong. She stayed strong throughout the, the illness.
Is she buried at a veteran cemetery?
No, we got her a plot out here near me. It's actually in a Catholic cemetery. I mean, we're not Catholic, but I just wanted something at the time close.
Well, at least with Catholic cemeteries, you don't have to worry about all kinds of strange things happening like you do sometimes in the other private cemeteries. Certainly, yes. There's interesting stories out of some parts of the country about that, but
yeah,
you can. Catholic cemeteries are going to be different.
But the Veterans Administration gave her a headstone.
Okay.
Well, it was not an actual huge headstone. It was one of the flat.
Okay. Right.
Flat kind.
The markers.
Yes, markers. Yes.
Right. Please share any reflections on what her life and legacy mean to you and your family. I know that some of you have kids, and so what does her life and legacy mean? What's the multi-generational impact, you think, legacy?
Well, I think my mother's presence has grown stronger over the years, because as I've learned more and as my children learn more, I think they have begun to recognize the importance of their grandmother and what she contributed, and even the experiences they had with her before she passed, I think are more significant to them. My mother always thought about other people, you know, and I think even when she was in the latter stages of her life, she was thinking about us, what would happen to us, and how do we make sure, how does she make sure that we're going to be all right? And I think once she was sure that we were all right, she was at peace. That's how she lived her life. And I think, you know, I think even in the military, I mean, the notion of doing your duty, your camaraderie, that you were not the center, that you had a job to do, that, you know, you saw other people in need and your goal or objective was to help them, to lift them up. And when you begin to put that all together, you begin to understand how you need to live your life. I think that's, at least for me, that's her legacy. But okay. Every day you discover, you know, something about yourself, and you say, "Well, where'd that come from?"
Absolutely,
mom.
Your parents provided such foundation in so many ways. It was a significant honor for mom to receive a Congressional Gold Medal. What was your reaction and that of your family when you found out?
Like, oh my gosh, I'm still in shock. it's like, wow.
Well, all of these women deserved it.
Yeah.
My mother deserved it. Not only what they did in the military, but what they did before they went in. And we understand what Black folk had to deal with at that time. And you put all that together and you just say, you know, fine, there's some recognition. But we hope that we all can learn from it by keeping it alive and understanding what these challenges were about and how these women were able to meet this challenge.
Yeah, I still think every time I talk to another descendant, I still think of how amazing it was that they volunteered to go into a war zone in the 40s. I mean, and that so much was going on in this country, there was such a strong, well, racism was always at the core. But there was also a very strong, there was an element in our own Congress who actually, you know, pro-Hitler. And they actually were sending out letters to homes to try to convince people to be anti-America, really, to that support. So you were getting this in the mail, you're dealing with all of these issues that our people have had to deal with. And then you still say, I want to serve my country. It's this strong element of patriotism and courage and a sense of adventure. So it's fascinating to think that they did that, made decisions.
It's interesting how we don't realize the importance of an event that we're involved in until many years later when someone else looks at it. I mean, I'm sure mom and the rest of the soldiers, you know, didn't know what they were doing would merit a gold congressional medal. They're just doing a job. But then when you look at it, you know, from a couple of, you know, years later, you said, this was amazing.
Yeah.
This is what they did, truly helped the war effort, you know? And I think that's something that we were fortunate to be able to do, look back and say, this is really, you know, people don't look at history. They don't really look at history as much as they should and learn from it.
Well, and as we know, there are those efforts to try to hide history, which is hugely problematic. Really? So I just have a couple more questions as we wrap up this evening. First one is, what do you think about her decision to serve the country at that time, given what was going on in America for African Americans, given the racist issues?
I just think it was great. She took the initiative and she just went forward and did it, you know?
Like the rest of the women
going on at that time.
Yeah.
They looked at, You know, you could, I guess a lot of women stayed at home, worked in the factories, but there was an opportunity to expand, to go abroad, to serve the country. And she jumped on it like, you know, like a lot of other women did.
Yeah, there were, at the time, there were 6,500 African-American women in the Army. And there were a handful of nurses that served in Africa, I believe. But you know, just these are, this is the core group. I mean, they only wants to go to Europe. So they were selected from those 6,500 as the creme de la creme. But given where the country is now, do you think she'd make the same choice again?
If it was the same type of war.
Yeah.
You mean a World War II, not a Vietnam.
Probably not. I don't know about a Vietnam War, but I don't. All I know is that whatever would happen, she would make the right decision.
Okay, so you trust your mom's thinking, decision making. That's always good. So it got you this far, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Can I share a quick story?
Absolutely.
This has to do with mom making sure that we experience. She took the three of us, got us all dressed up, made sure we were dressed up, and she took us to a French restaurant in Chicago. She took us to this restaurant called Jacques on the north side of Chicago. I remember distinctly seeing, when we went there, a string quartet, and there was a black cellist playing in the string quartet, and that just made me even want to play more, play the cello more. But that's another example how she wanted to have us experience a little bit of what she experienced from France.
Okay.
You know, and just to get our interest in stepping out and trying new things.
Okay. So wonderful. Go ahead, Manny.
I was just thinking one more thing. All of us are kind of like avid tea drinkers.
Yes.
I wonder where we got that from.
Hmm.
Because mom would drink, she would have that Lipton tea bag, you know, she'd make her tea and then she'd set it aside so she could reuse it like 20 times. and she had a slice of lemon with it. Mm-hmm. So, and we became tea drinkers too. I wonder where they drink tea.
I wonder.
All these little ways.
Lafayette, Indiana? No.
Well, you know, even though the battalion was not in either France or England that long, that short period of time really, really seemed to have had a big influence on them.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very big influence at talking to different families. I know in my mother's case, it was France, but she named it, both of her oldest two daughters have French middle names. And then when she came back to go to school, she double majored in English and French.
Oh.
Mm. So yes. And for other people, it's England. So it's you never know what a small little experience you have, what influence that's going to have on your life. So as we go through life, we never know when we encounter people and other things. So important to explore.
Mm-hmm.
There was I noticed we had a bookcase where mom would put the books when we were living in our original house on Wabash. And one of the books was a German book. I think it was a German, either German translation or something. And it fascinated me because, you know, German script has a different type of, it looks different from English. It has
very different.
I mean, your S's look like F's and things like that. It had umlauts and different, because I took a little German too in chemistry. That was something that, an influence from the war, I guess, that she had to learn some phrases or something like that.
Right. Well, they were working with German prisoners. Mm-hmm. So they work with them, with the mail. They're the ones who carried all the heavy bags and everything. I know my mother brought home, we found in her collection, we were cleaning out the family homestead, the very back of the safe, a German pistol. And it's like, we knew it was too small to be, my father was in the Korean War, we knew it was too small to be his gun. So I said, well, it must have been my mother's. Well, at that point, I didn't realize that they did not issue guns to the 6888 or to any women back in that time. And so when we were cleaning through some war of her files, we found a certificate from the government authorizing her to keep it as a spoil of war. So it was come from a German soldier, and it was like, you know, that allowed her to keep it and bring it back to the States.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, as we go through the letters and documents, and we look at them, you know, you look at them, every time you look at them, you kind of see something different. You'll see something you missed the last time.
Yeah.
So we'd had those, some of this information for my mother died in 2010. And it wasn't until the summer of 2022 that we started to find some of these documents, really read them, pay attention to them. Mm-hmm. So getting the Congressional Gold Medal is that thing that made us start to go through the files. Otherwise, you just have lots of boxes that you bring up, you know, the closing of the family homestead, there are lots of boxes in the basement.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So my last question is, what lessons from her life story can you share to inspire young African-Americans to embrace fear as opportunity in order to shatter glass ceilings and be their best selves? You know, all of you work with, you've worked with students along the way, or young people along the way, at the college age or not, or younger. You know, what lessons do you think there are in her story to inspire them to go out there and, you know, break that glass ceiling and do something you didn't think you could do, because you can do it if you believe you can do it?
Well, I think absolutely in terms of how I would deal with my own students, my mother's approach to, one, treating everyone with respect, and doing, you know, working hard, well, there are no shortcuts, you know, the learning that there are no shortcuts, that you have to put the work in, treat everyone with respect. I don't think my mother was very patient with people who looked down at others, or who mistreated others, because that's something that she never did. I never heard her speak negatively about people. There are people who probably didn't treat her well. She never said negative things about them. For me, that's one of the most important things. And I get messages from my old students who tell me, I understand now, you know, maybe they got that D, or maybe they got the head flunk the class, but they tell me they understand now. That's what comes to mind when I think about my mother. Yeah, I understand now.
Same thing with my students. I mean, I'm always encouraging. Like my mother did, uplift them, tell them, you know, it's not going to be easy, but you keep going. People are going to be out there trying to tear you down, but you've got to be strong and keep going and continue to go forward and do the things that you would like to accomplish. I just wanted to share from both my brothers. My mom had a saying, her philosophy was, have a love for learning, and serving others is to serve oneself.
Okay. So. Very good. Well, I want to thank you. Oh, I'm sorry, man. Manny, do you have anything over there?
Yeah, I think what I said before, she taught us to always just be curious, explore, get out of your comfort zone. And for me, it also meant bringing in tech and now art. I'm an artist now. I like to draw and sketch. Bring art into your life. You know, if I'd known a musical instrument, I'd be bringing musical instruments into my life. But, you know, bring tech, bring art into your life. Be curious. Go outside your comfort zone.
Absolutely. That's how we learn the most.
Please don't take life seriously. Don't take it serious. I mean, you only, as far as I know, this is it. You know, enjoy it. Help others. Try not to hurt other people.
Yeah.
Be open. Always be empathetic. Look it from their perspective before you jump in and argue. You know, I wonder why they're saying that. I wonder what they're thinking. Let me look at it from this side, you know, before you jump in and be totally reactive. Don't take life seriously.
Okay.
I think that's what she brought.
Okay. Right.
And I try to tell my kids about it. Hope they've learned it.
Well, Carol, Clovis, and Manny, I want to thank you for joining us tonight and sharing your family story. I'm so grateful.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Next Us 818 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight, I'll share a quote from author Daniel Fryer. Watch your thoughts. They become your words. Watch your words. They become your actions. Watch your actions. They become your habits. Watch your habits. They become your character. Watch your character, for it becomes your destiny. See you for our next show on Wednesday, March the 15th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.